hood, came up in a crouch to get a closer look at the footprints. They were the same ones they'd been tracking. Rising slowly, he paced around the pattern, looking for any sign of a mass exodus. As he drew closer to the back of the dead end, the stench grew stronger, so he knew where the shit had to be. But if anything, the tracks thinned out in that direction. Kyle made two full circles, an increasingly puzzled look on his face. He finally stopped in front of the ATV and shrugged. "They came in here," he said flatly, "and they didn't leave." Jared scanned every inch of the canyon walls above them, looking for any way a mob of cannibalistic Cub Scouts and a giant man-eating troop leader could have escaped. There were declivities and protrusions. Even a large, dark opening about 25 feet off the ground, a short distance further along the canyon wall. But the tracks didn't go there. "Well, shit! What are we supposed to do now?" Jared wanted to shoot something, or punch something, or kick it. Anything would be better than sitting around wondering what they should do next. And for the life of him, he couldn't figure out how Wiley could find them in the middle of the Goblin Hills. Kyle sat on the hood and rubbed the peach fuzz on his jaw thoughtfully. "Well, what would Wiley do?" Jared's answer was immediate. "He'd look at the evidence and follow where it leads." He couldn't keep sarcasm from creeping into his words. "You know that. And we did that. It led us here." He waved his hands at the barren sandstone walls and shook his head. "Right," Kyle continued, undaunted. "So, what evidence do we have?" Jared sighed. "Near as I can tell, just the tracks. And where do they lead? To a dead end?" "Exactly," Kyle said with a smile. "What?" Jared's thought process derailed like a commuter train in a kaiju movie. "These tracks led us here and don't lead anyplace else. The people we're after aren't here, so it can't be a dead end. There must be another way out." "Right," Jared droned. "So what? There's a secret door around here somewhere?" "I don't know." Kyle got down on his hands and knees. "Let's find out." Placing his nose practically in the dirt, he moved toward the canyon wall and examined the tracks, looking for the big set. He figured the owner might just be in charge, and if so, he might be the one to keep the group moving. Jared crossed his arms. "Come on, Kyle, that's just stupid. Secret doors don't exist." Picking through the footprints, Kyle finally found the big footprints layered on top of all the little ones. The big set walked straight in, and Jared peered at a small rock on the canyon floor, set up against the wall. The rock was rounded and protruded from the sandy earth around it by about 3 inches. Kyle made out a clear imprint of the big boot around where the rock stuck up, as if the boot had pressed into the ground without the rock being there. He reached out and pressed the stone. The thing gave slightly under his pressure. He stood slowly and motioned for his brother to step over. "Bring the Browning," he called over his shoulder nervously. He unslung his Remington and flipped the safety off. Jared approached and released the safety on his own rifle. The boys' hearts raced inside their chests, and Kyle could taste copper as a very rational fear slunk through his body like some reptilian predator in tall grass. Swallowing, he stepped on the rock and pressed down. Click, clunk, clank. The rock face shivered once and swung inwards with the clatter of rusty cogs and grinding stone. A dark passage opened up beyond the door, one large enough to accommodate a tall basketball guard. The stench that wafted out of the darkness hammered into them, assaulting their senses with equal parts shit, carrion, sweaty locker rooms, and the rotting feet of soggy corpses.
"Jesus, that's rank!"
Jared said. He turned sideways, covering his mouth as he fought the urge to vomit.
"Damn it,"
Kyle said, staring into the darkness. "We need the headlamps." He moved toward the trailer.
"Watch the tunnel,"
he said over his shoulder. He propped his Remington against the frame and opened the footlocker. Their baseball bats and gloves hit the ground first, then the sleeping bags and tent. He pulled out the headlamps, tossing one to his brother. He slipped his own over his head, clicked it on, and put the Remington into the footlocker. A dark cave meant close quarters, so he pulled out a pistol-grip Mossberg 12-gauge, pumped it once to chamber a round, and then flipped the safety off. He cracked open a box of shells, slammed one home into the Mossy's receiver, and filled his pants pockets with as many shells as he could fit.
So, Wiley said to wait at the entrance,
Jared said slowly. The unspoken suggestion in his voice wasn't wasted on his brother. Adrenaline pumped through them. They were worried about their friends.
I'm still wondering how the fuck he knew about this place.
Well, it can't hurt to take a quick reconnoiter, can it?
Kyle asked.
I mean, Cindy and the others might still be alive.
Jared's smile was wicked.
I'm thinking it's a long shot, but we gotta try.
He motioned for his brother to proceed.
You've got the shotty. You go first.
Reason and fear struggled against adrenaline and dreams of payback. Kyle hesitated for a few moments, but then thought about what he'd been taught. The shotgun was the natural weapon to lead with. He nodded and stepped silently into the cave, straining to hear anything further in the cave as his heart pounded in his ears. They now hunted on someone else's turf, and those someones were more dangerous than anything they'd ever faced. Silence was their best friend, and would be right up until the shooting started. Jared followed him in, reminding himself that in the cavern he'd have to really check his targets. Not only was his brother in front of him, but their friends might still be alive somewhere. The passage opened before them, rough-hewn and changing in size from about 2 meters to almost 3 in places. They moved forward slowly, the passage descending with a slight curve to the left.
"You know, there's something I don't get,"
Jared whispered.
"What's that? Why the fuck would anyone be down in a cave in the middle of the fucking desert?"
He shook his head.
"Something doesn't smell right." "No shit,"
Kyle replied, trying not to suck in the foul air still pressing into his nostrils.
"I'm beginning to think these aren't people we're dealing with."
"What do you mean, not people?"
Confusion twisted Kyle's face into a knot.
"What then?"
"I don't know. Cultists or something? I mean, like, real psychos. They sure as hell smell bad, whatever they are,"
Jared muttered. About 40 meters in, they encountered what had to have been a cave-in. The walls seemed scorched, as if explosives brought the ceiling down rather than time or pressure. Jagged chunks of rock littered the floor, and someone had reinforced the widened area above them with rough iron struts and irregular timbers. The cave-in continued for another 20 meters, and then ended, with the passage going back to rough-cut stone. They continued creeping along, and it was clear they were in a large, spiraling tunnel that looped deeper into the earth.
"What do you think Mom will do when she finds out we came in here?"
"Well, assuming we make it out, you know, as opposed to being eaten by psychotic, cannibalistic cultists, I'm pretty sure she'll take the Eskrima sticks to us both."
Jared shrugged.
"Whether or not she beats us to death remains to be seen. Yeah, Kyle whispered. He couldn't disagree.
I think a grunt of some kind, like a big animal, echoed up toward them along the passage.
Kyle froze in his tracks and held up a fist. Slowly, he reached up and switched off his headlamp. Turning, he pointed to his brother and pointed at the ground, indicating he wanted his brother to stay put. Then he pointed two fingers at his own eyes. Jared nodded, tightened his grip on the Browning, and set the stock into his shoulder so he could cover Kyle as he scouted ahead. Kyle lowered into a crouch and moved forward, listening intently as he inched along. He held the shotgun at waist level, his finger poised on the trigger guard, and the barrel aimed straight ahead at waist level. As he proceeded, pale light seeped around the bend, a faint, flickering glow that grew in intensity as he drew near. Then he heard the voices. But they weren't in any language he'd ever heard. They were guttural, rough, and the sounds reminded him of dogs or pigs or something, only deeper, more menacing. As he approached, the stench of carrion increased, mixed in with the smell of a slaughterhouse, butchered flesh, and spilled blood. There was also the smell of roasting meat, but not any meat he recognized. And they were just around the corner. Kyle turned. His brother's headlamp was barely in view around the curve of the rock. He tapped his headlamp, made a cutting motion with his hand, and motioned for his brother to come forward. When his brother came up, he moved forward. Side by side, they inched along. The darkness around them faded, and the passageway opened a dozen meters ahead into a torchlit cavern. They turned the corner together and froze in their tracks. A single torch protruded from the wall between two unfamiliar teenagers hung on the far wall. The boy and girl had been stripped bare, their hands cuffed in dark metal shackles, hooked on pins, anchored to the wall above them. Their feet dangled a foot off the ground. Their throats had been slit, and blood covered the front of their bodies to pool beneath them and run off in a trench along the wall. Additionally, the boy's left leg had been hacked off at the hip. But that wasn't what terrified the brothers. Off to the left squatted five humanoid creatures, about 4 feet tall, with greenish-black skin, broad shoulders, spindly limbs, and dark, matted fur. Their faces were pig-like, with short snouts and inch-long tusks protruding up from their lower jaws. Beady eyes in deep-set sockets glowed with an inner, reddish light. The things wore a mishmash of hide clothing, cast-iron bracers, and greaves. A couple of them also wore odd pieces of filthy human clothing that looked like it belonged in the 1980s. Each had a badly crafted weapon of some sort lying on the stone floor within easy reach, including a couple of hand axes, a battered sword, and one larger, double-bitted axe that belonged to the largest of the five. They conversed in their strange, grunting language as the larger one rotated a severed human leg on a spit over the campfire. Rage blossomed in Kyle's chest.
What the fuck?
He growled. All five creatures turned surprised faces toward the Schaefer brothers.
Boom! Turkey shot from Kyle's Mossberg turned the nearest pig face into a red, meaty cloud that spattered across two pig faces behind him. The headless corpse flew backward and slammed into another pig thing.
The four monsters, still breathing, squealed in unison, grabbing their weapons as they rose. Jared aimed at the next one in line and fired twice. The first round caught it in the chest, forcing it backward. The second hit it in the face, sent a burst of brains out the back, and hammered into the shoulder of the next one in line. A single shot from the Browning sent that one to the floor in a heap. The big one roared a challenge and rushed forward, double-bit axe held high. Kyle pumped the action and fired again, catching the thing square in the chest. Jared followed up with a shot through its throat. It tumbled backward to slam onto the stone. The last one screeched in terror, turned, and bolted for the passage on the far side of the cave. Both brothers shot it in the back. The thing slammed into the rock face next to the passage it had run for. Kyle took two steps, pumping the action of the Mossy again. He took aim, pulled the trigger, and blew the head off the last pig face. The body slid to the ground and tipped onto its side, one of its legs twitching. Silence filled the room, broken only by the adrenaline-fueled panting of the brothers. Gunpowder filled their nostrils, and the ringing in their ears reminded them why shooters wear earplugs at ranges. Half in shock, they stared down at the carnage as smoke dissipated on a current of nauseating air drifting up from below. The pig face's blood was nearly black and almost as thick as honey.
Holy shit!
Jared reached into his pocket and loaded a fresh mag into the Browning. He chambered it, hit the safety, and then slid four more rounds in.
What the hell are those things?
Kyle asked, slipping fresh shells into the Mossberg.
And what were they doing here?
I'm guessing they were guards,
Jared shrugged.
But I'm more worried about where the rest of them...
A deep drumming sound caught his ear.
Do you hear that?
The ringing in their ears had faded, and now that they were listening for it, the sound of distant drums and grunting chants drifted up to them from the downside passage.
We should keep going, but if we run into many more of these things, I'm thinking we'll need to get the hell out of here. We only have 5 rounds each.
Yeah, well, if we run into more, you shoot the ones on the left. I'll shoot the ones on the right, and we'll work toward the middle. That way we don't waste ammo.
Jared nodded.
Good thinking.
He hefted his rifle and motioned for Kyle to take point again. The brothers moved forward more quickly this time, moving deeper down the spiraling passage. They passed one single side tunnel that angled back and up at a steep angle. It was narrower than the main passage, but still large enough for something large to move through. With the sound of the drums and chanting growing, they continued on. Jared glanced back occasionally to check their six. They made one more loop downward, the drums and chanting rising to a deafening level, and the tempo quickening with each heartbeat. The brothers killed their headlamps again, revealing a growing brightness in the passage ahead. They crouched low, an inch toward a widening section of passage that opened up into a massive cavern, brightly lit by torches and a huge bonfire. They got down on their bellies and crawled forward, rifles ready. The path split before them, branching off to the left and right along the cave wall. A rocky lip stuck up that gave them perfect cover to look down into the cavern onto whatever lay below. Kyle gasped. Off to the left, Ashad's gutted body turned slowly on a spit. Two small pig things worked the spit, straining to keep the body rotating over open flame. To the right, a row of large pig faces in identical hides and war paint hammered on great drums. In the middle of the room,
A mob of the pig things stomped and grunted to the quickening beat. On the far side, Cindy lay trussed upon a large stone altar, her unconscious body restrained by four pig things. Just beyond, a bruiser of a pig face nearly 7 feet tall, in dark plates of armor, stood next to a large cave opening, holding a massive iron mattock. Then something moved inside the cave. The brothers watched in horror as a giant spider, nearly 10 feet long, leapt out of the cave and pierced Cindy's chest with its foot-long fangs. The girl screamed once and then went limp. Kyle, blind with rage, started to get up, ready to unload into the crowd, but his brother grabbed his arm and held him down.
No!
Jared hissed.
But...
Kyle strained against his brother's grip.
There's nothing we can do for them now.
Jared's voice was urgent.
But these motherfuckers must pay.
He locked eyes with his brother.
All of them. How do we do that? We're gonna need bigger guns.
An idea popped into Kyle's head.
Yeah, maybe something else,
he added with malice.
What are you thinking? Trust me.
He crawled backward as silently as he could.
I have an idea. I'm pretty sure I said, wait for me at the entrance.
Wiley scowled at the brothers as they walked out into the night.
Oh, shit,
Kyle mumbled.
We thought we might be able to save them,
Jared said quickly.
They're dead, Wiley. Our friends, they're all dead.
Wiley sat on the hood of their ATV, his trusty LAR-47 cradled in one arm, and two large duffel bags on the ground a few feet away. The old man wore a camo boonie rat hat, his bushy gray ponytail protruding down his back. The boys stopped short, in part because Wiley was there, but mostly because he had on a set of combat armor they'd never seen before. It covered his whole body, and there was a strange logo on the right shoulder guard. His Jeep CJ5 was parked behind their ATV.
Is Mom back?
Kyle asked anxiously, trying to change the subject. He could still see those two teenagers hanging on the wall. Wiley winced, knowing full well what Kyle was doing. It was an old dance for both of them. Kyle was the more sensitive of the two boys.
No, she's still in Vegas seeing an old friend and getting you your birthday presents.
Old friend? Kyle asked.
Who?
So,
Wiley interrupted.
How many of those pig-faced fuckers did you kill?
How did you?
Jared blurted.
Not my first rodeo,
Wiley said simply.
Look, boys, there's a lot you don't know. And your mother may not forgive me, but this is more important than my sorry old ass.
What do you mean?
Kyle asked.
I'll tell you everything tomorrow, okay?
Both boys nodded.
Give me a status report,
Wiley ordered, groaning slightly as he got off the hood. He left his rifle leaning against the ATV and limped forward a step. He'd limped for as long as the boys had known him. He'd said he'd taken a hit during the war, but it didn't keep him from kicking their butts during training. Jared quickly filled him in on what had happened, worried that the mob down below might discover the dead pig faces. Wiley nodded when Jared finished up.
Well, boys, we've got two choices.
He stepped up to the duffel bags.
We can either call in the cavalry, or...
He reached down, picked up the bags, and dropped them in front of the brothers.
You two can go back down there and take care of the bastards that killed your friends.
There's an awful lot of them,
Kyle said doubtfully. Wiley reached into a vest pocket and tossed a box at Kyle. It was brown cardboard and looked like an ammunition box. Kyle caught it. It was heavier than he expected, and it had a military-style label.
Wiley.
Kyle stared at the old man.
These are...
Wiley nodded slowly. The grin on his face would have made the devil proud.
Yep.
Aren't these, like, super illegal?
Kyle showed the box to his brother, whose face went wide with surprise.
I won't tell anyone if you don't,
Wiley said. His chuckle got both boys smiling.
Even with those, Jared chimed in, I don't see how we can get them all.
You haven't seen what's in the bags,
Wiley said. The boys bent down and opened the bags at their feet.
Holy shit!
Jared blurted as he pulled out an FNFAL. The battle rifle had been modified with a larger flash suppressor, a laser sight, and what appeared to be a custom-built stock.
That was your father's,
Wiley said.
Is this a...
Kyle said quietly when he opened his bag. He couldn't believe his eyes as he pulled out a solid-framed monstrosity.
An AA-12 auto shotgun,
Wiley finished.
I bought that for you shortly after you and your brother were born. There are Colt Commandos in there for you both, as well as a shit ton of special ammo perfect for what's down there. And you got your father's pistol, Kyle.
Wiley crossed his arms and smiled at both boys. Men, he corrected in his head. Today they were men.
I figured you both deserved one of your father's weapons, and those two saw him through quite a few shitstorms. It's your birthright.
So what's this?
Jared asked, pulling out the upper portion of combat armor virtually identical to Wiley's.
You both get a set,
Wiley said with pride.
Also your father's.
He looked a little embarrassed.
I'm afraid they might be tight. You two are a bit larger than he was. But for tonight, I figured they might come in handy.
What the hell is all this stuff? Kyle asked.
He pulled out his own armor and examined the emblem on the shoulder. It was a cartoonish version of Elvis smoking a big cigar on an olive-green background.
Well, the emblem is for Team Vegas.
What?
The brothers asked in unison.
Look, all I can tell you right now is that those things down there are the ones who killed your father. 3 months before you were born. Back then, there was an army of them. We thought we got them all and sealed up the cave, but apparently we missed a few.
Dad?
Kyle asked, shocked.
Who's we?
Jared asked.
It's a long story, boys,
Wiley said tiredly.
And you have to get down there and finish what we started.
I don't know,
Jared said uneasily.
Even with all this firepower, there must be nearly 100 of those things down there.
Hobgoblins, Wiley clarified. They're called hobgoblins. Mean as piss and twice as rank.
Whatever you call them, Jared continued, I don't see how we can get them all.
Kyle looked at the ammo box Wiley had tossed to him and eyed the gas containers on the trailer.
Did we bring all those styrofoam plates? He asked, looking at his brother.
Yeah, Jared replied.
3 big bags of them.
Then I have an idea.
Kyle's grin was malevolent. Wiley's eyebrow went up, paired with an appreciative grin.
You got a mean streak, son, he said.
Gee,
Kyle said sweetly, locking eyes with Wiley.
I wonder where I got that from.
He strode over to the back seat of the ATV and rummaged through a duffel bag filled with their camp gear.
Now help me put these plates to good use.
The drums had settled into a steady throb that echoed up the spiraling passage. The 7 bodies, 2 human and 5 hobgoblin, had been right where the brothers were forced to leave them. Now at the bottom of the passage, Kyle peered over the lip, his heart pounding in his chest. little had changed from the last time he looked at the hobgoblin party. The bulk of them were grouped up between the lip and the altar, stomping and grunting to the drums. The only real difference was that a handful of what Kyle guessed were females surrounded the obviously sated spider, rubbing red paint over its legs. Cindy's shriveled corpse, still prone on the altar, looked like a gray raisin, her limbs twisted at awkward angles. Kyle adjusted the wheel chalk he'd set against the rocky lip, lining it up between the passage and the altar. He crawled back and rose to a kneeling position just inside the passage. He took a deep breath and relaxed his muscles. The trick to skeet shooting was to let the barrel lead the target and fire. With a glance over his shoulder, he gave a thumbs up and waited. Further into the passage, Jared kicked the starter and fired up the dirt bike. He revved the engine once, dropped the clutch, and raced down the passage. Kyle rose, took a step to the side, and moved to the lip. He didn't see a sea of startled pig faces look up at the commotion. He didn't see the spider kick the females aside and move toward the altar. All he saw was the shot he was about to make. He visualized it. His finger drifted towards the trigger of the heavy weapon in his hands. He'd never even fired the thing before. And if this didn't work, he and his brother were dead meat. Jared shifted into second gear, goosed the throttle, and pushed off the back of the bike as hard as he could, making sure to clear the gas cans strapped on either side of the rear seat. The hobgoblins squealed and howled their rage. The spider hissed. The bike hit the chalk hard, bouncing the front tire up, and then the rear one, sending it into a forward tumble as it sailed through the air. Jared pulled the trigger on his AA-12 and held it down. Boom, boom, boom. The white phosphorus rounds Wiley had given him hammered into the dirt bike, burning everything it touched at 5,000 degrees. The already tumbling motorcycle twisted in midair. Woof! The gas tank detonated, sending flaming gasoline in a spiral pattern. Boom! Woof! All four gas cans detonated simultaneously. The styrofoam gasoline mixture inside blossomed into a sticky cloud, raining liquid hell upon the shrieking pig faces, burning a swath 30 feet wide across living flesh. The dirt bike, a spinning ball of flame, slammed into the giant spider, caving in most of its thorax as it sent the ruined creature hurtling into the rock wall. The big hobgoblin dove to the side, flames licking along its armor. Kyle drifted the barrel down into the line of drummers and let his own 20-round drum of Willie Pete's beat out its own rhythm. The drummers burned as they scattered. Jared grabbed his father's FN and stepped up behind his brother, and he held his fire. The last drummer went down screaming when the AA-12 clicked empty.
"Switch!"
Kyle shouted and stepped back. Jared stepped up to the lip, staring at a pit of flaming carnage. The incinerated heap of the spider twitched, and most of the hobgoblins in the middle writhed within the flames of a now smoke-filled cavern. Through the haze swam a mob of hateful goblin faces, all turned up toward the brothers. Jared pictured the dead faces of his friends and did what came naturally. He leveled the FN at a crowd of pig faces on the left as they surged forward.
Thud, 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 thud!
The HE rounds Wiley had provided ripped the hobgoblins to pieces. Great chunks of meat blew out their backs. Limbs tore free, driving the mob back.
The FN clicked empty.
Switch!
He shouted, and stepped backward. Kyle stepped in, leveled the AA-12, and opened up. White, hot death poured into the hobgoblins, who now scrambled over one another to find cover.
On the right!
He shouted over his shoulder. Jared stepped forward, pulled the bolt back, and poured a 30-round magazine into the handful of pig faces moving towards him. He spotted the bruiser stepping out of the cave, its fur singed. The thing bellowed something in its own language, and the hobgoblins around the boys began to retreat. 20 or 30 remained, scrambling back as smoke burned the boys' eyes and lungs.
Fall back!
Jared yelled. One at a time, they reloaded, with the last magazine and drum as they backed out of the passage, straining to hear any sort of pursuit as they moved. A couple minutes later, the big one roared, and a stampede of little feet echoed around the passage.
Here they come!
Kyle shouted. A mob of small, raging hobgoblins raced around the corner, all brandishing their ill-crafted weapons. At 20 feet, the boys opened up to the left and right, as they'd agreed. In perfect syncopation, the brothers mowed down the onslaught, one shot, one kill, one shot, one kill. The hobgoblins scrambled over their fallen comrades, and then the big one came into view. Finally, Kyle blasted the face off the last of the small ones as Jared took aim at the bruiser. He pulled the trigger. Click. The bruiser smiled. Kyle raised the shotgun and aimed. It was too far of a shot to guarantee a kill, but the bruiser got the message. He scowled and disappeared around the curve.
Keep going,
Kyle hissed. As they moved backwards, Jared asked,
Why didn't you take the shot?
Because there isn't one. I'm empty.
What about the pistol?
Jared accused. Kyle looked embarrassed, realizing that it was holstered at his hip. Then he frowned.
What about yours?
Jared got a sheepish grin.
Guess we're a little new at this, huh? I guess so.
Making sure the bruiser didn't follow, they emerged from the passage to find Wiley on the phone.
Yeah, boss. It's time you met him. Vegas, huh? I thought she might be coming to see you. All right, I'll see you soon.
He slipped the phone into his pocket and smiled at them.
Good news, boys.
A massive shadow dropped from above and landed in front of Wiley. The giant hobgoblin roared and swung its mattock, a hammering blow that caught Wiley in the chest and sent the old man sailing into the darkness. The brothers heard the old man slam into a canyon wall and drop. The bruiser spun, raising the mattock above his head. The Schaefer brothers moved in unison. The Colts slipped free of their holsters, the hammers clicked back, and a thundering hailstorm of 45 ACP blasted into the giant hobgoblin. A few rounds ricocheted off its armor, but most found gaps at elbow and neck. Finally, Jared aimed at its forehead and put his last round dead between the bruiser's eyes. The mattock dropped to the ground, and the monster tumbled backward with a tremendous thud. Something moved in the darkness. Kyle dove for the baseball bats they'd left on the ground and came up in a fighting stance.
Easy, Kyle,
Wiley said, wheezing.
Oh, shit, that hurts.
You all right?
Jared asked.
Some broken ribs, to be sure, and one hell of a lump on my skull, but I've had worse.
Wiley stepped up and gave the boys an appraising eye.
You boys are gonna do just fine.
Jared and Kyle sat on their living room sofa, worried looks on their faces,
as their mother paced back and forth like an angry tigress. They'd just told her the entire story. Wiley sat on one arm, wincing with every breath and picking at the medical tape wrapped around his chest.
"How could you?"
she screamed at all three of them.
"Especially you, Wiley, after what happened to Jimmy."
"That wasn't your fault, Heather," Wiley said gently. "You couldn't help getting pregnant, any more than either of you could help getting into this business." He took off his hat and dropped it on the coffee table. "We are what we are, and sometimes the choice is taken away from us."
"I never said I thought it was my fault."
"Yeah, you did, Heather. Not in so many words, but it was always there. The guilt you felt, because you weren't there to watch Jimmy's back."
"I don't know."
She stopped pacing.
"Maybe."
"Heather, I know you may hate me for all of this, but this was fate. You know how it works in this business. Your sons are naturals, just like you and Jimmy were." She got an agonized look on her face. "Together there wasn't a thing you two couldn't handle. You were unstoppable. It's the same for your sons. They were born for this, and born to avenge their father." "Boys," Wiley said, turning to them, "there's a man outside who I think you should meet. Feds are going to be here in a while, and he can help you through the debriefing."
"Debriefing?"
Jared asked. "Just go talk to him. Your mother and I need to talk." Kyle nodded and got up off the sofa. His brother followed him out into the driveway, where a lean, average-sized man with sandy blonde hair leaned against Wiley's Jeep, smoking a cigarette. Putting the cigarette out under a dusty boot, he stepped up to them with a slight smile.
"Evening, boys. Or should I say good morning?"
He held out a hand.
"I'm Earl Harbinger, and I knew your father."
He shook hands with the speechless brothers, and then his ears perked up. Turning, he stared down the long, dusty drive that led from the town to the Schaefer house. Two black sedans were headed their way, brimming with spooks.
"Listen to me very carefully, because I don't have much time, and you need to get this right. Those agents are going to grill you pretty hard about what happened in the desert today. Tell them the whole story, especially about how many of those things you killed. Stay cool, and swear to keep quiet about what you saw."
He reached into his brown leather jacket and pulled out a pack of cigarettes. Pulling one out, he said,
"Oh, one other thing."
Producing a Zippo from his pocket, he lit the cigarette.
"They'll probably ask you what you would have done if you ran into humans rather than monsters. Just tell them you didn't think that far ahead. Remind them that you're just kids, after all."
He turned and walked off towards the open desert, a trail of smoke drifting around his head. Harbinger paused for a moment and turned, giving them a wolfish grin.
"And keep in mind, after today, you boys are gonna be rich."
Since the secret government program, which shall not be named, has been under new management, MHI has teamed up with them a few times. These events take place after Operation Siege. A.L. The Troll Factory. Alex Schwartzman. When the zombies rushed our position, I froze up. They moved fast. Nothing like the shambling, dim-witted creatures from the movies. A half dozen of them coming straight for us. My fellow newbies didn't hesitate. To my left, Carl fired methodically, a lit cigarette dangling forgotten from the corner of his mouth. Paula whooped and cackled as she let loose with her 12-gauge shotgun. I was certain others were in their element, too, having finally been given a chance to take down real baddies after months of training. Me? I stared at the ugly critters through the scope of my rifle and couldn't bring myself to pull the trigger. It's not that I had any qualms about eradicating the unnatural things. Far from it. I joined Monster Hunter International to do just that. But when push came to shove, this wasn't like video games or shooting ranges. All I could think of was the night my life got ruined. We had just gotten married, Audrey and me. We were honeymooning in Florida. The newly minted Mr. and Mrs. Mike Cantor enjoyed a few days of hiking and camping in the Apalachicola National Forest. We were setting up a tent for the night when a half-man, half-spider thing attacked us. To this day, I only recall flashes. The monster's sharp claws ripping into my flesh, its fangs dripping with venom. I got between it and Audrey and fought back, armed with nothing but a small hatchet and aluminum tent pole. I screamed for her to run, but she stayed and fought by my side until it pinned me with its legs and bit, its venom burning like molten lead as it paralyzed my body. I woke up in a hospital. I was lucky, I was told. The team of hunters had pursued this rare Philippine spider demon for days and caught up to it before it finished me off. Audrey wasn't so lucky. We had to have a closed casket funeral. Took me weeks to recover, physically. Mentally was another story. At the hospital, they had told me that I had some form of PTSD. Not a night went by without me waking up in cold sweat from nightmares featuring giant spiders. The two remaining zombies were almost upon us. I could see the rotting flesh of their faces, could smell the stench of their decay. Still, I was unable to shoot. I joined MHI because I couldn't go back to my past life, the life where everything reminded me of the happiness I could have had with Audrey. Instead, I figured I'd dedicate myself to eradicating demons, vampires, and zombies so other couples could go on honeymoons and live to tell the tale. The world around me felt like it was in slow motion as I willed my finger to pull the trigger. It wouldn't cooperate. Instead, the hairy, disgusting spiders ran rampant through my mind. A blast from Paula's shotgun blew a zombie's head like a watermelon. Carl put a pair of bullets through the eye socket of another. Just like that, it was over. I lowered my gun and looked around, ashamed and afraid. But it seemed the others had been too busy fighting to notice how epically I had choked. There was much celebrating and high-fiving. I did my best to imitate everyone else's excitement. When we climbed into the SUVs, I pulled my cap over my eyes and pretended to sleep all the way back to Cazador, Alabama. The next morning, Carl woke me from yet another nightmare. "You okay, man? You were sweating and moaning like Casper the Friendly Ghost on LSD." I rubbed my eyes and mumbled something intentionally incomprehensible. Carl shrugged. "Harbinger wants to see you, so maybe splash some water on your face, huh?" Well, crap. That didn't bode well. Surely the boss had some experienced hunters watch our first outing. Surely they'd seen me fail. I cleaned myself up and got dressed, all while trying to figure out how to maintain my dignity as I got booted from the ranks. Inside my mind, the spiders scratched in earnest. When I got there, Earl Harbinger was chatting with a pretty redhead I didn't recognize.
"Mike," Harbinger said amicably, "meet Heather Kirkinen."
The lady and I shook hands. She had a solid grip. I wondered if she was a PR person who conducted exit interviews.
"You used to be a computer hacker before you joined up, right?"
asked Heather. I never cared for that term. Not exactly. I was a network security expert. So, really, the opposite.
"I see."
She sized me up.
"Do a lot of security experts have aliases? Black Neo?"
"Neo used to be my handle on a pro video game circuit. But then there was another Neo, and the guys..." I pointed at my face and shrugged. The name stuck. The spiders scratching at my brain reminded me that I never really fit in. Not growing up as a mixed-ethnicity inner-city kid in the Bronx, not among the mostly entitled suburban teenagers at gaming tournaments, and not with my fellow IT nerds at work. and now I was finding out I may not be a good fit as a hunter.
Either way, said Harbinger, Mike is our top computer expert.
He turned to me.
We could use your help.
Maybe they weren't going to fire me. But were they going to stick me in the server room somewhere? Not a lot of monster slaying potential. Unless you count an occasional computer virus.
There's a corporate data center in Podolsk, Russia, said Harbinger. And in that data center, they employ several trolls.
He didn't sound like he was passing judgment. Nor should he. MHI cooperated with orcs and elves and other non-humans, and even had its own troll running the IT department.
This didn't work out well for them, said Heather. The trolls have run amok, taken over the facility, and eaten their corporate overlords. Local hunters have been retained to clean up the mess.
There's a company near Moscow. We worked with them last year, said Harbinger. It turns out they're all right.
Harbinger seemed to divide all Monster Hunter outlets into two groups, those that were assholes and those that were all right. The all right ones you could trust with your life.
Problem is, there's some sensitive data stored at that facility, said Heather. I'm going to lead a small team to liaise with the Russians and retrieve that data.
She nodded at me.
That's where you come in.
We don't usually loan out our hunters, said Harbinger. But for you, I'm willing to make an exception.
He smiled at Heather warmly.
So long as you promise to take real good care of them.
An international mission sounded splendid, especially in light of what I'd been expecting to happen. It seemed Harbinger didn't know that I'd choked after all. I felt a strange mixture of relief and shame for getting rewarded with a cool assignment, despite my screw-up. I wondered who else was going. Would I get the chance to work with Owen Pitt, or Holly Newcastle, or someone equally cool from Team Harbinger? But those guys weren't IT experts. In which case... Is Melvin coming too? Harbinger frowned.
Son, you don't send a troll to a troll revolt. He might think it's a party.
Instead of Melvin, Harbinger assigned my buddy Carl to round out the team. Carl's computer skills were limited to playing Candy Crush and losing, but he was interested in joining one of the international teams, and I guess Harbinger didn't mind sending two newbies on such a training wheels mission. After nearly a day spent in planes, trains, and automobiles, we arrived at the Russian hunters' headquarters, somewhere on the outskirts of Moscow. It looked like the private Dacha of some communist big shot, fallen into disrepair in the decades since Perestroika, but fixed up recently. You could see the fresh patches of paint and concrete in places. It was large and offered as much privacy as any estate this close to Russia's capital might provide. Heather headed off to meet with the Russian hunter's boss, some man named Krasnov, while Carl and I were ushered into the cafeteria for some refreshments. There were several hunters in the room, gregarious and loud. They were just like our guys back in Alabama. Carl and I grabbed some bread and cold cuts from the cornucopia of food. Seriously, the tables were groaning with the weight of deli meats, potato, herring, and other dishes, not to mention vodka and beer. Owen and some of the others would have had a field day. Their Vegas buffet exploits were legendary. The Russians kept stealing glances at us, but none approached. They probably had never seen a black Jew before. Carl waved his sandwich at me. With his blonde hair and blue eyes, he fit right in with the local crew. Or maybe they're stunned by my good looks and winning personality. The largest of the Russians broke from the group and made his way toward us. He was nearly 7 feet tall and made of solid muscle. Basically Ivan Drago's big brother. He grinned.
We see Vampire, Goblin, and Kikimora every other week, he said in heavily accented English. After this, different skin color is not big deal, da?
I smiled politely while Carl laughed uproariously. The Russian extended his hand.
Hi, I'm Sergei, but you call me Ponchik. Everyone else does.
Mike, I said, and that's Carl.
Hey, is that a Chronorex 500?
He pointed at my smartwatch, the latest and greatest on the market. Turned out, Ponchik was almost as much of a gadget head as me. Our conversation quickly descended into techno-babble, prompting Carl to flee and try his luck with hunters whose foreign language was Cyrillic rather than nerd. We chatted for hours. The spiders in my mind scratched less loudly. I felt welcomed, and my anxiety remained in check. I told Ponchik stories about my time on the pro gaming circuit, and he educated me on the history of monster hunting in Russia. Back in the Soviet days, it was a government-controlled thing. The commies brutally exterminated anything that wasn't human. When the USSR collapsed, Russia still had its version of the MCB, but all sorts of private outfits, cooperatives as Ponchik called them, sprouted to fill the void. The current government attitude toward monsters wasn't quite as extreme. They were happy to employ the agreeable ones, or look the other way when corporations who paid the bribes did the same.
We knew about the troll factory for years, said Ponchik.
The troll factory? I raised an eyebrow.
Not real factory. It's just what we call it. Big, boring office. They use trolls for corporate spying, propaganda, to write bad reviews of competitor products on internet, stuff like this. But we, how you say, had bigger fish to cook. Trolls behave, not kill anyone, so we don't bother. Now they misbehave, we go to work. It will be piece of pie to defeat them.
For a guy without an ounce of fat on him, Ponchik sure seemed fond of slightly askew food metaphors. We entered the troll factory at dawn. Heather, Carl, and I followed a team of 12 Russian hunters on to the teeth. The factory was a 4-story office building, drab and gray and so ordinary it might as well have been in Jersey. Heather had expressed some concern about going in light, but the Russians all seemed as confident as Ponchik.
It's only a few trolls, said their leader Oleg. What we've got here is overkill.
He was wrong. The trolls waited until we got past the foyer and ventured deeper into the bowels of the building. We hoped to surprise them. Instead, they ambushed us. They attacked en masse, at least 2 dozen of them pouring out of offices and down staircases. 8-foot-tall green humanoids with unnaturally long limbs. They were a terrifying sight. We retreated through a maze of cubicles and corridors, cramped spaces, preventing the hunters from taking full advantage of their guns. The Russians left at least 2 mauled bodies behind. A door burst open, and a troll came at me with a nasty club that had large nails embedded at its business end, creating a makeshift morning star. I moved to duck, but he was too fast. Just as the club was about to brain me, someone yanked me backward. The club missed my head by inches, and its nails bit into the gray sheetrock of the wall. As I landed ungracefully on my ass, I saw Ponchik tackle the green bastard before he could recover his balance. The Russian landed on top of the troll and drove a big, mean-looking knife through his misshapen head. He got up and turned to me, bits of the troll's brain on his blade.
Something wrong here.
No shit, I said. There were a lot more than a few trolls.
Yes.
Ponchik moved fast and half-dragged me along as he spoke.
But also trolls act strange, fearless. They swarm, not care if first ones get shot.
Come to think of it, they seem to act just like the zombies from the other day, trying to overwhelm us with numbers, not caring for their individual safety. I thought trolls were supposed to be smart. But then, we also expected there to be only a few of them. There must have been a lot of vacant real estate under Russia's bridges. We turned the corner and came face to face with 4 more of the damn things.
Blind!
Ponchik cursed. He shoved me back in the direction we'd come from.
Run!
But I wasn't going to abandon him. I wasn't going to freeze up again. Not this time. I pulled my pistol, aiming to get at least a few shots in before Ponchik, who rushed ahead like a cartoon